This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin the Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Mark Moose is kind enough to join us again on this Friday. The Moose back in Connecticut. Mark, how are you on this Friday morning? And what a game one we saw last night in the NBA Finals.
Well, Dave, always good to see you. Good to be back with you again on this Friday. I'm good, and I'm still stunned by what we saw in Oklahoma City last night. I got to be honest with you. I had to go back when I got up this morning. I had to go back and watch the highlights again to really believe like that happened again with the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, here we go. It is deja vu all over again. I'm sure a lot of the teams like the Knicks are saying, oh, yeah, we know all about this, and we've seen it before. We might see it again. Great lineup here on this Friday. Of course, Jensen Lewis, our co-host here on the program, is down in North Carolina for the Super Regionals. We're going to catch up with Jensen here coming up to begin hour number two. Thomas Gable is going to join us here at the end of hour number one from the Borgata. I'll be very curious now with two Midwest teams here what the books are seeing the action for this NBA Finals and beyond. Of course, BMAC, Brian McFadden is going to join us here, Mark. That's going to be a great conversation. They have a new quarterback. I think people might have heard of him. Some guy named Aaron Rodgers. We'll discuss all of that and what it means for the black and gold this year. Lou Finicaro joins us in hour number three as well. UFC 316, Mark, not too far from you in Newark, New Jersey tomorrow night. Two title bouts on the line there. And then we're going to get game two of the Stanley Cup Finals, and Jonathan Davis, the Iceman, is going to join us here to preview that game and what we might see for the rest of this series. But Mark, without further ado, not a surprise, let's get to it. Our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
You know, he might not have been a superstar to the public media, if that's still a narrative, on Tyrese Halliburton, but he seems to hit every big shot that is necessary, at least when it matters the most. And here we go. SGA was fantastic, 38 points, but a losing effort in an epic comeback by the Indiana Pacers. I say epic, but Mark, we've seen this song and dance before. As we mentioned, down 15 in the fourth quarter, and they do it again. Come back on the road. It's Halliburton with 0.3 seconds. Your game-winning bucket, 111-110 is the final. That number closed 10. I had it at 9.5, and I felt like that was a good number. The under also hits and closed 230. Was that on the right side there as well? But, Mark, when you see this, is it now a pattern that Rick Carlisle, okay, you know, you don't want to fall back as much as they do a couple times by 20 to the Knicks, and come back and win those games, now 15 in the fourth quarter. But why is this team being able to pull off these epic comebacks in the NBA playoffs?
Well, I think each and every instance, Dave, I think is a little bit different, right? Whether it be Milwaukee, whether it be Cleveland, whether it be the Knicks, or now on the road against the 68-win Oklahoma City Thunder team. So I don't think one instance is everything in the same. I think it's the relentless nature. If you want to look at the characteristics of Indiana, you know, the ability to adjust and adapt as the game goes along. I think they had 19 turnovers in the first half. Yep. They had under 10 in half number two. They still turned the basketball over a lot. They did a great job. They out-rebounded Oklahoma City. I thought Dagno going small might have been an issue last night for the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, you need a guy to have, you know, one of the stars on Oklahoma City have a bad game. I don't even – SGA was brilliant. You know, the secondary and third stars when – and Chet Holmgren was brutal last night. Yep. For Oklahoma City. And they were plus 21 from behind the three-point arc. So, like, there are things when you look at Indiana, and when that game starts to get close – you know, we talk about the times of, you know, sometimes you it's good to put a team in an uncomfortable position and see how they react. Well, we've seen Oklahoma City when they haven't had these blowout victories at times, whether it be clock management, when to foul up three, have issues of being uncomfortable when things get uncomfortable. And I think that's what Indiana did last night. And here's the thing, like when that game started to get when Nembhard hits that three, mm-hmm. under two to go, and Breen is going crazy on the broadcast to make it a three-point game, you're saying to yourself, I've seen this before.
Yep.
Right? I've seen this before, and I do know this. Indiana might not win. They're going to have an opportunity to win it late. And then after the SGA miss, when Halliburton gets the basketball, they don't call timeout, Dave. When Halliburton takes the shot, he has been Mr. Clutch in this NBA postseason. I had no doubt that he was making that shot.
Yeah, right there with you. And again, I was saying in a bunch of different group texts, like even at the after the first quarter, as dismal as it was, I was like, they're live. You know, at halftime with those 19 turnovers that you alluded to, I went, boy, if they can minimize those turnovers, they get a real shot. If you had told me, Mark, pregame, that Indiana turned it over 19 times in the first half, I would have thought they're down 30. And the fact that they were only down 12, right, that to me was actually the saving grace. And you heard it with Carlisle mic'd up at halftime. He's like, guys, we're right in this thing, right? Like, there was no panic there. They knew they couldn't play worse, and they played a whole lot better in that second half. And I'm with you. I felt like OKC got a little tight, right? And you would expect that for a team. Pascal Siakam's the only guy that's won a ring at anybody on the court here, so he knows what this is like. They were in these life-and-death situations with the Celtics last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I kind of felt like I think we're evaluating the teams a little bit incorrectly before the season begins or the series begins. Indiana's the team with actually more experience with similar rosters as to where they've gotten at these young parts of their careers.
Right. You just looked at it and said, okay, well, Oklahoma City's defense is going to be the thing that defines this series, right? And they've got the MVP and SGA. And, yeah, you know, the detractors of Indiana are going to say, well, yeah, they got through the East. But, I mean, Cleveland was banged up. Boston obviously got eliminated by the Knicks. The Knicks were a good basketball team by no stretch of the imagination. Were they a championship caliber basketball team? Somebody needs to tell the Knicks somewhere in that organization after they fired Tom Thibodeau earlier on in the week. But there were issues with the Knicks. Like they brought up on the broadcast last night, like there's nobody for the Pacers to go out there and target, right? With Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. But you mentioned the halftime piece with Rick Carlisle in Indiana. The Pacers in the first half turned the basketball over 19 times. You know how many points the Oklahoma City Thunder scored off those 19 turnovers? 9.
That's unbelievable.
Like, and Carlisle brought it up at halftime to his team. Like, that's a game, like, you think about, and we've seen it, whether it be college, whether it be the NBA, a team has those amount of turnovers in the first half. That is a game where you're looking to watch something on Netflix or Apple TV in the second half, whatever it might be, because that game's over, right? There's nothing to watch. But Indiana couldn't have played as poorly as they did. Yep. They adjusted. They played significantly better in the second half. I think they scored 66 points in the second half as a team, right? Got the pace of play. We're draining threes. How many corner threes did they hit last night? Mm-hmm. Obi Toppin was terrible early. He was brilliant late. And the Pacers were able to rally. And they have a guy that some in the NBA thought was overrated in Tyrese Halliburton. But ooh, I'll tell you, when the game is on the line and he's got the ball in his hands, I think he's making the shot every single time.
We got this tweet from Kirthika and Tyrese Halliburton. How about this? Is now 6 of 7. That's a percentage of almost 86% when taking a shot to tie or take the lead in the final 30 seconds of the fourth quarter or overtime in this entire postseason. That's the most such shots in a single postseason since 1997, Mark. We're going back in the day. So you can have the debate out there in the public space here of whether or not Halliburton is a superstar. Great. We do know this, and the numbers bear it out, Mark. You know, we got this clutch narrative. It feels like this is a guy, and you mentioned it. You had no doubt in your mind he's hitting that shot when it's going up, right? And look, they're
when SGA hits back rim and Indiana grabs the rebound and they don't call timeout and they're like, let's go, and they get the ball to Halliburton. Yes, I had no doubt after I saw that shot fall in game one at Madison Square Garden, hitting the back of the heel
to the ceiling,
basically going 30 feet in the air and falling right through the hoop. I had no doubt. I didn't think it would look like that. Like, but I thought Halliburton was going to make the shot. Yes.
Like the great Yogi Berra once said, it's deja vu all over again. That's exactly what it feels exactly like with Tyrese Halliburton. Maybe it's going to be deja vu. Yes, you're still seeing Aaron Rodgers. He's coming back to the NFL this year. But now with the Pittsburgh Steelers, it does feel like a worst-kept secret that we kind of all knew was going to happen, a matter of time. But here he is. Mark's going to leave New York and go into the Steelers. It's a one-year deal. He's expected to be at that mandatory minicamp next week. So, again, I don't know that this is a shock to anybody out there. And I mentioned we're going to have the two-time Super Bowl champion, Brian McFadden, formerly of the Steelers, on the program later on today. But I look at this and I go, we kind of expected this. How do you view the Steelers short-term with number 8 coming into the fold here?
Yeah, Dave, I still think they're the third best team in their own division. I mean, they're not better than Baltimore. They're not better than Cincinnati. You know, if Cincinnati could overcome their early season struggles, they start every year 0-2, right? But if Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow can figure that out, you know, I'll take Burrow and the Bengals over the Steelers. And I have a healthy respect for Mike Tomlin, what that Steelers defense can do. And I think Rodgers showed you when he was healthy toward the tail end of last season with the New York Jets that he could still throw it. This is not Drew Brees at the end. It's not Roethlisberger at the end. It's not Eli Manning at the end. Is he the same player he was 7 years ago? No, he doesn't have the same escapability. He doesn't have the same movement within the pocket. You have to go out there and protect him. But is their quarterback situation this year now better than it was a year ago with Fields and Wilson? Yeah, I would think it is. And I would think Rodgers, you know, is going to be motivated coming off how it ended with the Jets. And I'll tell you this, you know, it was the worst kept secret, as the headline is, because you know who the Steelers open up the season with? None other than the New York Jets.
Oh, that might draw some intrigue right there in Jersey there from week number one. How about that? Steelers, by the way, win total sitting at 8.5. It is juiced to the under, by the way, minus $1.30. So a 10-win team from a year ago. They're getting Aaron Rodgers. We'll break that down a little bit later on as the program goes on. But, Mark, when we come back, we do have a game two tonight in the Stanley Cup Finals north of the border in Edmonton. We'll break that down and look ahead to game number two in the NBA Finals on Sunday. Got to wait a couple days here and see what adjustments now OKC has to make, if you can believe that, to get this series knotted up at one. Just getting it started, a big Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. Edition. Mark Melissa's Dave Ross here with you on this Friday. Going to catch up with Jensen Lewis here a little bit later on. He's on assignment down there in North Carolina getting ready for the Super Regionals. But Mark, we do have a lot to get to. And again, we're going to have Jonathan Davis on in hour number three to help us break down this game number two between Florida and Edmonton tonight, this rematch in the Stanley Cup Finals that went the way of the Oilers in overtime in game one, 4-3. And now they vaulted, Mark, over to being a $2 betting favorite to win this series and bring the cup back to Canada for the first time since 1993 when Montreal won it. And I look at game two, and you see here it's ticking up $1.30, still $1.22 down here. So shop around. We always say this, Mark, but it is, you see that's 8 cents off there, depending on if you're shopping at DraftKings, other places, but $1.22 here at Circa, and that total back up to 6.5. Now, by first blush, and I played the over in game one, and we get home there when, once that 3-all tie hat happened, you knew you were home free there. I wonder if tonight might be a little bit different. Remember how open it was early on, and you had the power play goal and the challenge and those sort of things that kind of opened up that game early in game one. I wonder if game two, at least from Florida's side, might get played a little bit closer to the vest. You had a 3-1 lead and the bobber couldn't hold it. Do you think game two plays out differently than game one?
I think Paul Maurice is hammering that home with Florida. I mean, I think they are. I mean, and you look at the game-winning goal, set up McDavid to Draisaitl. It was the delay of game penalty by the Florida Panthers late in that overtime session that led to the power play. And then they had the 2-on-1 advantage, and Bobrovsky had no opportunity late to go out there and make that save, right? So I think for Florida, I think they're going to look at and say, and Maurice talked about this, and you heard the reports that they got to be more physical, right? Take away their space, take away their ice, all of those things when you look at Florida. I don't think given the magnitude of the offensive power of the Edmonton Oilers, which is all well documented, I don't think Florida wants to go out there and try and get into a game where they're trying to win the high score. I think they want this series to be a little bit more defensive. I think they want to take the physicality to the Edmonton Oilers. Now they need their goalie. Listen, I think for Florida, they're a little stunned, right? They had a 3-1 lead. I think it's the first time this postseason. I think they were 10-0 with third going into the third period with leads up until game one, and Edmonton ends up winning that series. I think they had like a 26-game postseason winning streak when they had leads going into the third period that got snapped in game one of the Stanley Cup Finals. So for the Oilers, I think they sent a message that this series is going to be different. Last year went to seven games. It was wonky, though, right?
Yeah.
Florida leads 3-0. Edmonton comes roaring back. You think the Oilers are going to finally win it, and then the Florida Panthers win game seven. But I would agree with that sentiment, Dave. After a high-scoring opening game, I would think tonight is a little bit more played closely to the vest if Florida has anything to do with it. I don't think Edmonton wants that. I think Florida wants that, and we'll see exactly who is able to impose their will on the opponent.
We mentioned Bobrovsky there and not being able to hold on to that 3-1 lead, obviously not all his fault. And it is kind of interesting to me in the Conn Smythe here, Mark, that it's actually come down. He's down to 4-1 to win this as the second betting choice. Connor McDavid now is odds on, by the way, at -$1.50. Does that surprise you that the Bobber, because like Sam Bennett had a couple goals, he's 20-1. Sasha Barkov there is drifted a little bit in the marketplace too, to 12-1. So it does feel like it's Bobber or bust if you really want to get in the Conn Smythe and you try to get a better number instead of playing the +$1.80 on Florida to win the series. Would you rather play, if you're a Florida backer, would you rather play the Bobber at 4-1? Or do you think now maybe some of these guys like Barkov, Bennett, Matthew Tkachuk could get into the mix here, and I'd rather just be sitting on that +$1.80 ticket and not stretch it out for Bobrovsky.
Dave, I'd rather take Florida and to win the series than trying to figure out exactly who's going to win the Conn Smythe. Or like, because there is also a pathway where McDavid plays brilliant. You know, Florida wins the series and McDavid still wins the Conn Smythe. Like, we've seen that. So there is that opportunity as well. I think the money coming in on Sergei Bobrovsky shows you the importance of the goalie. Like, going into the series, I liked Edmonton to win it. The fear that you have, though, is Skinner and Bob, right? And I do think there is a decided edge or a trust with the Florida goalie as compared to Skinner. Now, Skinner, after, you know, Edmonton jumps out 1-0, allows three unanswered goals. They trail 3-1. From that point forward, he was great.
He was. Right?
There were some scoring chances for Florida. You know, he tightened things up. He was great. However, like, what version of Skinner are we going to get consistently in these Stanley Cup finals? I think that's where the burn is on Bobrovsky, saying, well, if Florida wins it, I think the goalie is going to be the reason why, because he's going to have to slow down Draisaitl, McDavid, the Oilers' power play. He's going to have to be the best player on the ice, and I understand it, but I also have the understanding that, say this is a seven-game series and McDavid plays brilliantly, like, there is still a pathway where McDavid wins the Conn Smythe, the Florida Panthers are hoisting up the Stanley Cup, and nobody from the Florida Panthers win the Conn Smythe. That's highly possible as well.
Yeah, it could happen again for a second year in a row. If that happened again, could you imagine Connor McDavid's disdain? If this lose again, he'd be like, please don't give it to me. You give it to anybody else. I don't want it.
Yeah, I don't want it. Right. Well, when did you see the uproar in Edmonton when they won the Western Conference and he was touching the trophy?
Oh, yeah.
And Canadian fans were going crazy. They're like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Don't touch the trophy.
That's terrible
bad luck. Like, don't you know? We haven't won a cup. This country hasn't won a cup since 93. Like, don't touch the trophy. We need all the good mojo possible.
Is that a Canadian thing? Because Sidney Crosby did it back in the day with the Pens. I remember that was kind of an uproar there. Maybe they're not as superstitious.
It's a hockey thing.
Yeah. Right.
I think it's a hockey thing more so than anything else. But it was funny seeing the reaction from the Oilers fans after he touched the trophy. McDavid doesn't care. He's like, I'll touch the trophy.
Are you surprised?
I'm the best player in the world.
Mark, have you ever voted, like, whether it's for basketball awards or any of these awards? Because I always say in these marketplaces like the Conn Smythe, it's hard for me to bet on these awards because I can't get in the heads of the voters, right? Like, I thought for sure Halliburton would have been Eastern Conference MVP. And they gave it to Siakam, right? So, like, we're assuming by the numbers, McDavid at -$1.50 would be the guy if Edmonton wins. But Draisaitl, with those bookend goals, you know, the kickoff game one and gets the overtime game winner here at +$4.50, could there be a nuance to the writers and somehow they would give it to Draisaitl over McDavid?
Well, there could be. I mean, Draisaitl didn't score last year in the Stanley Cup Finals, right? So, like, there could, and he's a, you know, a top five player in the world. I think the argument would be is that is he getting set up by McDavid on some of those goals?
Yep.
Is it a singular effort? Because, I mean, Dave, you and I, we all know this. Looking at it, McDavid's the best hockey player in the world.
No doubt.
So Have I voted? Yeah, I mean, like, I vote for the Heisman Trophy every year. I mean, it's a different marketplace because that's a season award. You're not looking at a singular series. Like you mentioned, the Eastern Conference Finals, Halliburton thought he was winning as well.
Totally.
As we saw that video and him taking the step forward when they were making that announcement. And then he was as stunned as everybody. But like 9 people vote for that award in the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And I think the vote was 5-4 in favor of Pascal Siakam, and he ends up taking the award. So, yeah, I think it's a positive. If you're an Oiler fan, you come out of game one as this, is that we took a shot from Florida. We end up winning the game in overtime. We outlast them. This is a veteran-oriented team. They added some vets. Knobloch has done a wonderful job as head coach.
Yep.
And then you look at Draisaitl. If Draisaitl is able to be the premier goal scorer that he's been throughout the course of his career in this series, is there a potential where if he has 4 game-winning goals, say, for argument's sake, in this series, and they win a Stanley Cup, that he ends up being the I wouldn't say that's out of the realm of possibility.
That would be fascinating how that, especially if McDavid's setting him up like did the other night,
yeah,
how that conversation would go. But that would be a fascinating one. Again, Draisaitl plus 450. McDavid right now odds on it minus $1.50. We mentioned it here. Game 2 is going to be Sunday here, Pacers and Thunder. Pacers right now on the money lines plus 410. Thunder, you get a late 550 in game 2 after that game 1. Shocker last night, 111, 110. Totals come down a little bit already here for game 2, Mark. And it does not surprise me that there's going to be a little bit of an overreaction. But how about this? They're up to 11-point favorites in game 2. Do you see that? Like, I don't know, again. Like, you saw it there with the Knicks. The Pacers, when they play with house money, they can play loose. I would be a little bit weary, and I said this last night before game 1, of laying the 9.5. I think I'd be more leery about laying the 11 in game 2.
I think, and I think these doubts actually feed the beast of the Indiana Pacers. Like, they clearly are the team that they wake up every day and like nobody believes outside Indianapolis, right? Because nobody does believe. And the betting markets lead you to believe that nobody believes. Oh, okay, well, you came back from 9 down with under 3 to go in game 1. Now you're even a bigger underdog going into game 2. I think it's the zigzag theory to an extent. I think in Oklahoma City, when you look at them analytically, they're significantly more dominant at home and better at home than they are on the road. That's what leads to the stunning aspect of what we saw game 1 last night, and that they will respond in kind, and that what we saw from Indiana, even though we've seen it series in, series out, is not necessarily repeatable against this team, against this Oklahoma City team.
Amazing. Going to wait a couple days to get to game 2 Sunday night. But again, 11 is what we're already seeing on that side. That's kind of wild. Check out VSiN.com if you haven't done so. When you wake up each and every day, you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. You're going to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as little as $9.99 for your very first month. You're going to access all of our great articles we have each and every day, including those super regionals. Matt Grissom's got his best bets there. Greg Peterson, Major League Baseball. We're getting ready to race up there in Saratoga. JD's got the game 2 previews. He's going to join us later on as well. And we got some French Open for you too. So check it out at VSiN.com/subscribe.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back. Mark Lewis and Dave Ross here on a Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. Going to have Jensen Lewis join us here in hour number 2, along with BMAC, Brian McFadden, 2-time Super Bowl champion, talk about all the things going on. It's so funny, Mark, because I reached out to BMAC just because that's my guy. I just want to talk football with him sometimes. And then Aaron Rodgers signs. I'm like, wow, this is kind of the perfect day to have you on. Like, again, and we talked about it off the top of the show. We knew it was going to happen, Mark, but like, you think Aaron Rodgers, is this the last of Aaron Rodgers, or will we see him one more time?
I think it depends on how this year goes. You know, Dave, I do. I mean, I you know, I think anything's on the table. Not everyone's going to age as well as Brady.
Right.
And I don't think Rodgers has aged as well as Tom Brady. But, you know, how does this year look? Like, it could play out a lot of different ways. And there are going to be a lot of doubters for Aaron Rodgers and say it's going to be a disaster in Pittsburgh. And I don't think it's going to be that. I just don't think they're as good as the other two, the top 2 teams in their division. When you look at the Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals, could I see it continuing? Yeah, past this season, I could, but I think it's going to be kind of a year at a time kind of a thing for the Pittsburgh Steelers now here moving forward. And, you know, what kind of success? How does the offense look like? What does the offense look like? You know, the Steelers go to the playoffs. Do they win a round? like all of those kind of things. And then, you know, then it's the yearly, let's take the thermometer out
right.
and see where the temperature is of Aaron Rodgers and see exactly what he's doing in the off season. And when he's standing on a beach with his AirPods on, staring out at the abyss and the ocean, the Pacific, like all those things that we get into that comes along with Aaron Rodgers, right? That, I mean, that's it. I lived it for 2 years here in New York. Packer fans lived it for a better part of, you know, over a decade. So that comes along with it. I think it's a good signing by the Steelers. You know, it was a fait accompli. At some point in time, it was going to happen. It's great that he's going to be at mandatory minicamp. I think it's an upgrade at the quarterback position, especially given the fact of I think the Steelers still have a really good defense, an okay offensive line, and they're good at this, good enough at the skill positions to be able to take advantage of the arm talent of Rodgers, even at 41 years old.
California obtuse comes to the Steel City. It's going to be wild to see how that works out. We're going to catch up with Thomas Gable in Atlantic City there at the Borgata in the next segment. I wonder if people are running to the window to bet the Steelers after this news last night. We'll talk about that as well with Thomas. We got a big golf tournament going on north of the border. It's the Canadian Open in Toronto, outside of Toronto. They've moved this around a little bit from the normal spot, so it's the first time there. And I think, Mark, the conversation coming into play yesterday was, how will Rory McIlroy play? Because he was the massive favorite. He's about plus 450 before they teed it up yesterday. He had to go to Ludvig Åberg as the second betting choice before you really started to get into some of these longer numbers. And Rory is nowhere to be found on the leaderboard here. He shoots a one-over par round on Thursday. He is now drifted at 60-1 in some places, 45-1 at DraftKings here. The tournament has begun here for round number two. Thorbjørn Olesen, 9-under par, a really good first round. He's right there at the top of the leaderboard and also a plus 450 in the odds board. Shane Lowry, a good first day. Jake Knapp, 7-under par. He's at 12-1. But I want to start with Roars because next week is Oakmont, of course, which is the our championship, not the Canadian Open, but the United States Open. And Mark, he's, you know, at his press conference yesterday, we ran some of the sound here on Visa by the Books. He just seems like he's, I don't know if he's dealing with things that are away from the course. And I don't want to say it makes him unbettable. He was already unbettable for me at the price points that were given. But now with this kind of added where is Rory type of guessing game, I don't know how you play him next week at Oakmont.
Yeah, I don't think he can. You know, we were joking around about it during the course of the break when, like, well, like, do you want me to feel bad, like, for where Rory McIlroy is? Like, when it gives you an appreciation for the really highly motivated upper echelon players, and that's what McIlroy, you know, he's an upper echelon player, but the guys that are still willing to work even when the success happens. But, you know, when he's like, oh, it's been hard after I won the Masters and to come down off that moment and to get back on the range and hit golf balls for 3 hours, like all of these things, the motivation now, like you get, like if you're observing, like an athlete is basically telling you, you know, that inner fire is not what it once was, right? The drive to go out there and finish off the career Grand Slam. And he finally got his green jacket and everybody in the golf community celebrated, right? To the point where, like, okay, well, this is now going to be a launching point and Rory's going to go win the PGA and then the US Open and then the Open Championship. And he's going to reclaim himself as being this dominant guy. Well, that's not McIlroy. I mean, it just isn't. So, like, when you look at it and a golfer is telling you that, and we want our athletes, regardless of sport, to go out there and be honest, like, as a better, you've got to look at that and say, okay, well, he's basically telling me where he is mentally right now. I'm going to stay away until that changes, right? Until that changes with Rory McIlroy. Now, he might win, but I'm not going to get a favorable, like, I'm not going to get, McIlroy's going to be, McIlroy in the marketplace is going to be, the odds are going to be like he is this dominant player, but he's telling you mentally right now it's not there. And Dave, you know this better than anybody. How much is golf a mental game?
Oh, man.
And so if it's not there for McIlroy, how then do you invest in that market betting on McIlroy to go out there and win anything right now until that mindset for him changes.
He's the second betting choice next week, obviously behind Scottie Scheffler at Oakmont at the U.S. Open at plus 750 next week. The only other guy in single digits on the odds board is the LIV golfer in Bryson DeChambeau at 9-1. I'd much rather play Bryson right now, sight unseen, at 9-1 than I would Rory at plus 750 next week. I wonder if those numbers will change. The updated numbers here, Mark, and this would be interesting to chart. Like right now, you'd say, boy, I could hop in on a Rory top 20 at plus $1.75. He's got to make the cut. There is a cut this week, right? This isn't a PGA Tour elevated event or a LIV golf event where you have no cuts. So you better make sure you get inside that cut line here today. And that gets back to your motivation question, Mark, of whether or not he even, I don't want to say cares about the Canadian Open. Obviously, you don't tee it up if you don't want to try to win. I know that's his mentality. But you do have Oakmont coming up. It is one of those back-to-back weeks. I hope he doesn't mentally check out and gets a couple days extra prep for Oakmont next week, but that could very well be the case. You want to get on Rory top 10 right now, plus 350? You can, but theoretically, to get there, when you shoot one over par, this is going to be, you know, a tournament, it looks like, at least now, that the winner could be at around 20 under. To get into that top 10, you better be looking at 15 under, so do that math for the 3 days for Rory. I just think, Mark, normally this is a spot I jump in at a guy like Rory at these numbers. This is absolutely a stay-away spot for me going forward for the rest of the week until I see and hear from Rory that he's mentally checked back in.
Right, I agreed. And, you know, and listen, a lot of that could change. He goes out there and goes and shoots 6 or 7 under par today.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden you have a different mindset. But, like, when you're looking at, and betting golf, Dave, is difficult, right? Because it's the course, it's the layout, it's, you know, greens and regulation. Some courses suit certain golfers a little bit better based on ball flight, all of those things, right? So, but when you look at McIlroy's got the game where regardless of layout, he's got the game to be able to go out there and put himself in a competitive nature. I just think given what we saw in the opening round, I don't know if the Canadian Open is necessarily the great motivator for Rory McIlroy. So when you're looking at, you know, when you're looking at top 10s and top 20s, given all the things that we have seen on the course and what we have heard from him off the course, McIlroy would not be a golfer that I'm looking to go out there and invest in at this stage of time. I'm just not. I'd find other guys, interesting guys, where this Canadian Open, where I think they're playing well, and this is a supreme motivator for them. And for McIlroy, it isn't.
And that's one of the reasons why I gave out on the program yesterday. Taylor Pendrith, I could have gotten him north of 20-1. He is now 14-1 at 500 par. So 4 off the lead here to begin his round 2 today. Right now, he's the low Canadian. Nick Taylor had another really good round there as well for another Canadian player. He's at 30-1. And the big Swede has already drifted to 30-1 as well. Another guy that you kind of look at and go, man, all the talent in the world, I got to figure out what's going on with Ludvig Åberg and his game, because normally you don't see those type of prices in a field that is not a U.S. Open or a Masters-type level field. So normally those would be numbers that I would play. Probably stay away guys right now at the top of that board from yesterday in Rory and Ludvig. Before those lines move, you got to check out Sharp Plays at sharpplays.com. They're already moving them for you. You don't have to chase the market. They're going to move it for you. You don't have to outmuscle those billion-dollar sportsbook or full-time professional bettors on your own. Sharp Plays, you don't have to worry about that stuff. They're powered by cutting-edge AI, trusted by insider sources. The Sharp Plays delivers the edge that serious bettors rely on. You're going to get free betting reports, real-time alerts, and market-moving insights, all delivered right to you via email and or X. And this is not some overnight startup. Sharp Plays has a documented track record going back to 2011 with receipts, public logs, and results right there on the website, sharpplays.com. Trusted by the pros, watched by the books. Check them out now at sharpplays.com. All right, Mark, when we come back, we're going to go to New Jersey, catch up with Thomas Gable there at the Borgata. We'll break down not only what's going to happen with the Steelers, now that they have a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, but also the NFC South, talk about the Belmont, and also the NBA Finals. A lot of ground to cover. That's next with Thomas Gable when you come back with us on VSiN by the Books. We'll be right back.
into VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Mark Lewis is here on a Friday. Going to catch up with Jensen Lewis at the beginning of hour number two. He's down there in North Carolina for the Super Regionals. But Mark, what I love about this show, By the Books, is we get to go back behind the books with our guy Thomas Gable right there at the Borgata. Does a great job as a race and sportsbook director there in Atlantic City. Give him a follow on X, as I do at T Gable Sports. Thomas, great to be with you as always on these Fridays. And normally we're going to talk, we will talk NFL a little bit, and obviously some big news there in your neck of the woods too. But I do want to begin with the Belmont tomorrow there at Saratoga. And with the change of venue, now they're not at Belmont, but at they're at Saratoga. Does it change for you guys, or are you still going to see massive handle for the final race in the Triple Crown?
Yeah, we will still see really good handle on it. You know, I think it actually, with our customer base being so close, there's there are people who end up going to Saratoga for it. We saw it last year. We'll probably see it again this year, where maybe they wouldn't go to Belmont Park if for the Belmont Stakes, but last year they wanted to go to Saratoga just because it was at Saratoga. Same thing this year. But I mean, obviously the difference here with it being run at Saratoga is going to be run at a mile and a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to see the showdown here again between journalism and sovereignty, and still sort of scratching my head about sovereignty skipping the Preakness and Mott's decision there. I'm glad we get to see them and see these two go at it again this weekend. And while the pace here should be slower than the Derby, sovereignty currently 7-2 should certainly be there in the mix again, and journalism 6-5 coming off that spectacular win at the Preakness. We saw how special this horse is in that race just 3 weeks ago. But you know, there are some other talented horses in this 8-horse field. Baeza, you can't be ignored there, 3-1 currently. Finished third in the Derby, was actually closing fastest of all in that race. Also finished second to journalism in the Santa Anita Derby earlier this year. And if you remember, wasn't even in the original field for the Derby. He got in on a scratch. So Flavian Pratt gets the trip here. And could be closer to the pace here in the Belmont. But I think the one horse here that we finally get to see again, who scratched from the Derby due to a foot injury, also caused him to miss the Preakness, is Rodriguez, 7-1, starting in the three post. He won the Wood Memorial. And this horse has early speed. This is a Bob Baffert horse. I was planning to use him in the Derby and some exotics, and obviously didn't get the chance. I am going to do so here. Crudo in the five post there, 15-1. His speed could be problematic for Rodriguez, but this is his grade one debut. I still believe Rodriguez is live here in this race, and not sure he has enough to beat journalism, but I'm certainly going to be using him in some exotics there underneath.
Thomas, are you surprised that Sovereignty is the third betting choice, even though he won the Derby and was 2-1 on the morning line? You mentioned his current odds sitting there at 7-2 behind Baeza and obviously journalism.
I think you're going to see journalism is the rightful favorite. I think you're going to see journalism go off as a favorite. Sovereignty and Baeza, it'll be interesting to see where those odds land. Baeza was a very popular betting choice for the Derby. A lot of horse guys wanted to see him in the field and were rejoicing when he got in. I'm not surprised that we're seeing Baeza take money here early as well. So it's going to be interesting. I think Sovereignty and Baeza are going to be very close in the odds when they go off.
We've got a great deal going on with our friends over there at First Bet as well. So it's going to be a free First Bet and VSiN Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. So all you have to do is enter your picks for Saturday's top races to win great prizes up to a $500 wagering voucher from First Bet. So head over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. That is VSiN.com/Belmont. Thomas, I got to ask you, and this is something Mark and I talked about off the top of the show, and I don't mean to giggle, but are you seeing Steeler money coming now that Aaron Rodgers has made it official that he's going to be the quarterback in Pittsburgh this year? That win total still sitting right there at 8.5. Do you have to adjust anything now, or was this already baked in the cake when you put those numbers out?
Yeah, in terms of the futures, no adjustment was made. And again, we were already pricing the Steelers as if this was going to be the case. And I think bettors as well, they kind of expected this to happen. I think it would have been a little surprising if Rodgers didn't sign with the Steelers. So, you know, in terms of futures, no change, no big rush here in terms of Steelers money. You know, when you're looking at the power rating of Steelers, I mean, it's Rodgers at this point in his career. I think he's maybe a small upgrade on Mason Rudolph. It's not going to, you know, change the power rating too much on the Steelers overall. It's just, you know, we've seen enough of Aaron Rodgers now and at this point in his career. So we'll see what Tomlin can get out of him. I think it's going to be an interesting soap opera again there in Pittsburgh. Wherever he goes, it's a soap opera. But just seeing that dynamic between him and Tomlin play out will be interesting.
Thomas, I'm curious, away from football for a second, when I ask you about the NBA Finals. I saw the NBA commissioner say that, you know, we want parity. We want the idea no small markets in the NBA. We can get into the conversation about ratings, right, and all that. But I'm curious from a marketplace perspective, handle perspective, what did you see last night? What do you expect Sunday night, game two of the NBA Finals between the Thunder and Pacers, with now Indiana as an 11.5-point dog going into game two?
Yeah, I mean, the right for game one was strong. Whenever you have a really big favorite, like the Thunder are at home, and, you know, going off 10-point favorites, now 11 for game two, it's probably going to discourage a little bit of handle there. But just because it is the NBA Finals, people are going to get involved. The bridge jumpers were out in full force for game one. Trust me on that, and taking the money line with the Thunder. So, overall, good result for us when you can collect all that money that from those money line individuals. But you know, series price obviously has been adjusted down now. Thunder only, if you want to lay it to 350, they're going to come back and do this. But you know, before the series even started, you know, people were taking, you know, laying the games with the Thunder, whether you're laying a game and a half or whatever, if you're doing the exact result, you know, 4-1, 4-2 for the series. It was pretty much all Thunder money in terms of series pricing before game one. So we'll see how, if people are going to continue to bet them as we head into game two tomorrow.
It is kind of fascinating because look at that price now for Indiana to win in the exacta, to win in six. It's now been cut in half from 15-1 to +750. You would think if the Pacers were to win, that might be where it could happen in game six back in Indiana. I got to ask you very quickly here, Thomas, what about north of the border game two tonight for the Panthers and the Oilers? How was game one and how are you guys positioned for the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, we're in good position in the futures on both these teams, Dave. In terms of game one, we did see a lot of Edmonton money come in. Game two so far, people have been more or less on Florida's side here. It's a little bit more money right now on Florida for game two. But overall, in terms of the futures, we're in good shape that both. We went in the future book on both. So no real liability there. We're just going to be taking this game to game.
Thomas, one more. I want to circle back to where we began, the Belmont. What do you guys have set up? You know, they have the racing festival. It's loaded with stakes. I mean, it's almost kind of like Breeders' Cup light on Saturday. For all those that head to Atlantic City, what do you have in store for the racing fan on Saturday with the Belmont being up at Saratoga and a really competitive 8-horse field?
Yeah, we'll be doing the same thing we typically do for Triple Crown races and the Breeders' Cup. We will have our conference center set up basically as a secondary race book, big screens in there, bars, betting terminals, so lots of seating. So we typically have to set up overflow areas for the Triple Crown days and Breeders' Cup as well in the fall. So no change to that. We're expecting some good crowds on Saturday for sure for this. And again, should be a good race, even with the 8-horse field, you're going to get some good horses in there, and having the Preakness winner and the Derby winner in the field, it's going to draw.
Thomas, got about 30 seconds to go. Because it's in Newark, New Jersey for UFC 316 this weekend as well, are you seeing people getting excited about that a little bit? Is there getting lost in the shuffle with all these other things you can bet on?
No, it's going to be – listen, UFC always does well, and it's a good card. Anytime you have a pay-per-view, and it's going to be a big day Saturday, and that's going to be the capper on Saturday night. O'Malley in the main event, he always draws, going to draw recreational money, and so it's, I think the handle's going to be really strong on it.
Yeah, you guys got a lot of things going on up there in the Northeast this weekend, Thomas. We appreciate your time as always, my friend. Enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up again next week.
All right, thank you guys.
There he is. Give him a follow. Thanks, on Thomas. X at T Gable Sports. Coming back, Jensen Lewis going to kick off hour number two. It's VSiN by the Books.